and welcome to this edition of the NDA at 10 podcast series.
I'm your host, Hamsini Kartik.
Joining me today is Ajay Ranjan from Yes Bank. And here we are to decode about a couple of things that have changed the digital landscape in the banking space with the advent of UPI, with the advent of AI, ML, etc., propelling growth in the banking industry. Ajay Ranjan is somebody who doesn't quite need an introduction in the banking space. Almost every banker would know him. But yet, if I must put in some words for him, he's the country head of the government multinational transaction banking and international businesses at Yes Bank. And Ajay is here to tell us what sort of cost advantages digitalization and the whole digital transformation has brought into the banking system. Listen to this conversation. Thank you so much, sir, for joining in for this podcast, taking your time out. The whole objective of this podcast is to sort of somewhere understand how technology has made lives easy for you all as bankers in the process of evolution. And also, what are the certain things that has changed in the recent years thanks to technology? So let me start off by asking this. How have some of the legacy practices in the banking sector refined or changed with the advent of technology? More recently, let's say from 2018 onwards.
No, perfect, Hamsini. And, you know, thanks. It's a very interesting question. And, you know, I think we all practically, you know, look at that situation change, you know, in our daily lives. So if you look at India, you know, we have been at a cusp of a massive transformation in digital technology. And when we look at it from a banking financial sector perspective, both on the enterprise as well as on the consumer side, we've seen this massive change. And, you know, Indian banking coverage, which used to be around 27% in 2008, actually went up to 80% in 2017 with the whole advent of Jan Dhan and all that. And I think around 2023 will be above 90%, you know, from a banking coverage perspective. All of this has been on the back of a tsunami of digital revolution, which has happened in India. And we are privileged to be in a country where we have actually, in our lifetime, we've, you know, seen that change happen. If I put some numbers, you know, into a scale of what this has translated into, 75x growth in online banking has happened between 2017 and 2023. So from 0.1 billion transactions per month, we are today at 9 billion transactions per month.
Oh,
we have seen almost a 6x growth in Demat account between 2012-23 from 20 million to 114 million. We've seen a 233% CAGR in UPI transactions between 2017-23 from 6 million per month to 8 billion per month. We've seen credit grow at 2x from 14 trillion to 30 trillion. Between 2017 and 23. And all of this has actually been on the back of digital interaction in the digital in terms of banking transformation. Now, while there has obviously been a massive business opportunity, but I think what we should also realize is that also put a lot of pressure on the legacy banking infrastructure.
Right.
And this also got further compounded because a lot of public digital infrastructure got developed into India. And a lot of emerging technologies also over the last decade or so has also blossomed, right? So a mix of all of these banking volumes, public digital infra and new emerging technologies, all of this has put a big impact on the legacy banking infrastructure, which to a large extent was monolithic, it was complex, and in some cases it had been unstable as well, right? So lot of the all the banks actually have dealt with this phenomena through a model of either retain, transform, or drop, right? So essentially what banks and financial institutions have done is that core banking, you know, certain elements of core banking have been retained, while the transformation has been done around the rest of the two, right? Transform or drop. And this has been very, very critical also to keep up with the rapidly evolving security threats and also customer expectation, right? So that all of this had to be, you know, kind of managed at the same set. So if you look at from a bank perspective, transformation has been done maximum around acquisition, around credit assessment, collections, and payment stack, right? Now, migration to cloud or hybrid cloud has also been an area where we put a lot of transformation. And last but not the least, given digital volumes are growing, cybersecurity and fraud controls have also massive digital transformation from a bank perspective. So how does all of, so we've seen, you know, the volume, we've seen the impact. Now, how does this get executed? This, you know, really has been done by banks or financial institutions through collaboration with fintechs. Now, not everything, you know, can be done by the bank themselves. So there is obviously fintechs have seen a splurge in terms of growth. So banks' partnership with fintechs across sourcing, onboarding, underwriting, analytics, risk, compliance, all of this, you know, has had a very key impetus in terms of digital transformation. Banks also realize that not every innovation needs to be done at their end. There are certain innovation where you need a network effect for innovation to happen. So what banks did is that we created amongst 18 large banks, we created a bank-led consortium called IDDIC, Indian Bank Digital Infrastructure Company. The whole ethos of this company is that any technology-led innovation which will create a network effect will be rooted by IDDIC and not by respective bank themselves. So this IBDIC plays a very critical role there. We've also seen regulator play a very, very critical play here. So RBIH actually, you know, recently they launched a frictionless credit platform. So that, again, the whole ethos of creating that platform is they wanted to standardize the way that you access digital information for credit underwriting, and they wanted it to standardize in a standardized manner, offer it to all the banks, right? So including banks who are not digitally savvy, they can, rather than inventing everything themselves, they can simply plug into one platform, which is promoted by RBIH, and they access all digital surrogate information through that platform. So if you look, you know, whether it is banks' own innovation, network-led innovation, regulator-led innovation, all of this has you know, translated to the digital transformation which is happening. Now, you know, you question that what has it led to in terms of tangible value, right? So it's only a nascent development over the last decade or so, but already if you translate it into business, there have been massive benefits in terms of how bank sources liabilities. So today, a gap of liability which used to be around 2,000 to 4,000 has come down to sub 1,000 to 2,000. There's almost a 50% reduction in CAC for liability sourcing. There is almost a 30 to 40% decrease in credit decisioning turnaround time. There is a TAT reduction in opening of saving account, for example, what used to take 2-3 days, 4 days, manual engagement of documents, etc. Today, we can open instant saving accounts. So, you know, there is a massive cost and process efficiency which is there. Unsecured loans, which used to take a few days to disburse, today, between 2 to 10 minutes, one can actually disburse an unsecured loan. Secured loans from few days has come down to, you know, from weeks has come down to few days. Credit losses, you know, have also reduced significantly, almost 10, 15, 20%. Credit losses have been reduced because of better credit profiling. So if you look at overall, you know, and of course, you know, there is a lot of operational efficiencies which banks would have created from robotics or machine learning and other automation, digitization that they would have done at their end in terms of pure process efficiency. So overall, you know, it has created financial efficiencies for bank and it has created operational efficiencies for the banks.
Perfect. I want to touch upon two things here, Ajay. One is that when this whole digital adoption was seeping into the banking system, it was seen as a fight between fintechs versus banks. You know, you have the tech capability, but I am the execution engine. You know, banks, it was a tug of war between the banks. Do you think today we've come to a stage where we can harmoniously work, sit with each other across the table and work? It's not about me versus you, it's about me and you. That's one part to it. And the second thing I would want to sort of explore in detail with you a little later is the UPI effect. But before we get there, let's just sort out this fintech thing. How do you look at fintech? You look at it as competitor or you look at them as growing along with you?
So I think the you know, the issue or perception around this whole conflict was only in the initial stages. I think broadly, and at least, you know, if I can talk about Yes Bank for itself, right? So sure. Today, being a startup bank itself, if we are such a dominant player in terms of digital payments, right, is purely because we early on adopted the road of collaboration and partnership and not one of conflict, right? So, and that I think is a phenomena which today practically every institution has imbibed. I don't think that question is any longer valid that it is, you know, me versus you, or, you know, that one will eat away the market share of other. I think very clearly, both in terms of business as well as in terms of messaging from the regulator also is very loud and clear. You know, you have to coexist to survive and, you know, thrive on each other's strength. So fintech should leverage on banks' trust factor, the regulatory license, distribution, etc. And the banks should actually leverage on fintech's, again, digital distribution, innovation, the speed of execution. So all of those, you know, need to be kind of tightly coupled now. Right. Course, you know, initially there was also always a question that innovation will hamper, you know, will get hampered by trading on green.
By boxing too much of regulations.
Fintechs have also very clearly understood that, you know, one cannot be in the realm of gray. One need to very clearly, you know, go along with the regulation and innovate. And that is what is a more sustainable business model, both for the banks as well as for the fintechs, right? So I think today, it's very well established that collaboration is the only way forward. And, you know, you should choose your partner and then grow along with them.
Fair enough. What do you think is going to drive the next wave of innovation in the whole space? And I'm asking this, there's one element of UPI as well, which I have in mind while asking this, because initially UPI was just considered to be a payment facilitator. Today, I have ability to connect my card to the UPI. I can take a loan on UPI and stuff like that. It's also evolving from beyond just a payment product to a banking solution. How do you see this going? How do you see innovation on UPI going forward?
It's a very good point you raised, Hamsini. But before I come to that, I think, you know, let us first understand what is the opportunity here, right? So today, if you look at India as a whole, right, India has reached from a GDP of 250 billion in the 90s to 3.7 trillion in 2023, right? Obviously, banking has played a big role in terms of this whole shift, you know, in the growth in GDP. However, you know, look at the aspiration, right? We want to reach 10 trillion in few years. We want to reach 30 trillion by 2047. This is going to be huge. And what it will also mean is that Indian banking will require significant investment in terms of capital, also in terms of digital transformation, if we have to support, you know, the government's aspiration to reach this $30 trillion economy, right? So it will need a lot of changes. Of course, you know, the point that you made around partnership earlier, it becomes very, very relevant, because does everything need to be done ourselves? The answer is no. Right. You will have to collaborate. You will have to see synergies in terms of how you grow, you know, within this space. So three pillars I would, you know, like to highlight here. One is distribution. Mm-hmm. The second is risk management. And the third is customer experience. So your entire digital transformation strategy will, you know, have to be around this. So customer acquisition, I think very clearly, I believe that whether it is on the liability side or on the loan side, both will have a significant impact of digital transformation. Here, I believe GenAI could be one of the very, very key proponent which will drive digital adoption over the next few years. In fact, there's a report by McKinsey Global Institute which actually says that GenAI could have the largest opportunity in banking. Annual potential they put somewhere between $200 billion to $340 billion. I think that's a significant impact in terms of how banking can evolve. But from an India perspective, if I look at it, India will always be digital, because India, we have an India, we have a Bharat. And I believe that the human touch will continue to remain. So India will not be only about AGI, which is the artificial general intelligence or artificial super intelligence. For us, it will be AEI, which is artificial empathetic intelligence, which will create the path forward. The second, from a loan distribution perspective, today we see that around 30% of retail loans are disbursed in DIY mode. I think there is a significant upside to this embedded finance. For example, you spoke about the UPI convergence with credit. So with credit on UPI and credit card on UPI, I believe that this whole digital credit or digital lending could actually go to the next level. And most of our retail loans, consumer loans, for example, could be in a DIY mode or an embedded finance mode.
Perfect.
But to do all of that, I think what is going to be very, very important is how is risk management managed. And this is where the availability of data, real-time, high-quality, heterogeneous data across both consumer and business lending becomes very important. Account aggregator is going to play a big role here. The combination of account aggregator, digital lending guidelines, all of this. And also, I spoke about the frictionless credit platform, which is which is innovated by Reserve Bank of India Innovation Hub. All of these are going to play a big role in terms of how risk is managed, how data is sourced, and it is executed from a deployment perspective. I also believe that digital public infrastructure is going to play a big role from a risk management perspective. So today, whether it is the data layer, payment layer, GSTN, from a business perspective, all of this is, can be digitally managed. It is available at population scale, and we can use this to not only authenticate, but also underwrite and also, deploy using your UPI example that you said, the credit can also be disbursed and also the repayment, the collection can also be managed in a fully digital manner. So I think this is going to really propel the next wave of innovation. Last but not the least is customer experience. Eventually, that is going to be the adoption and the experience that you create for customers is going to be, propelling the biggest wave of digital adoption. So here, hyper-personalization, which has thus far been only a pipe dream. So, it has add-on PowerPoint presentations. But I think now is the time with Gen AI where it will become a reality. We've already seen that getting translated. And in my view, over the next few months or years, we will see product nudges. We will create AI, Gen AI, actually creating hyper-personalization into your liability journey, your investment journey, your credit journey, your collection journey, everything, right? So that is really where the strength and the power of AI, will aid financial service adoption.
Perfect. In this whole transition of, the physical way of doing things to the tech, right? What are the top of the mind 2-3 large dilemmas as bankers you go through?
So digital transformation has always a few challenges which are, I think, pretty much every institution faces. I think the first and foremost, see, everyone knows what is wrong. I think that self-realization, I don't think is a challenge anymore. So everyone knows that economy is going like this, digital is evolving like this, and hence I need to do this. I think to that extent, probably everyone is now very evolved. Now, what people struggle with is because the legacy systems are so monolithic, expensive, etc. I think people tend to, question around make or buy, right? Should I develop everything myself or should I buy? Right? Then make or buy decision is extremely important. And that is where organizations go through that issues of, I spoke about earlier, retain, transform, drop, right?
Sure.
So this is where people will, take a decision that, okay, is it economical? Is it efficient to develop? or should I just buy from a fintech who has already made it, who has already deployed it, or who has already demonstrated the scale to manage it, you know, with high risk, high probability of governance, etc., and scale, etc., right? So, and of course, you know, the fact that what you need to retain, so something which is very core, you may need to retain, and what can you deploy. So that's, I think, the make or buy decision. The second, I think, as I said, is the legacy system itself. So now what happens is that various institutions have various platforms and systems for various activities. So how do you bring all of them together? How do you eliminate, you know, few of them? How do you create a middle layer on top of, you know, some of those which can bring in those efficiencies? I think that decision is also very, very important. And that's a challenge which one needs to solve. The third important part is return on investment. Now it immediately becomes a chicken or egg situation, because you see a lot of technology coming. Everything is, and you know, is very exciting, and everything comes with a nice story and nice reports by nice consultants saying, you know, this could be $X billion opportunity, $Y billion, etc.
Absolutely.
Et cetera, right? So one needs to, and one has only finite amount of money, right? So you need to figure out, okay, should I invest in A or B or C, and what will be the return on investment, right? The second is also the FOMO effect, right? Oh, I'm seeing this person doing this, or Y person doing this. Will I be left behind? So what you need to be very clear is that what is your digital strategy? What should you invest in? What is going to be the bang for the buck? And in some cases, you may need to take a leap of faith. But then, you know, that's a very conscious decision that one may need to take. Today, you know, broadly, and I, you know, this is again more from reports, but Indian banks spend only 2% of their annual revenue on technology. When you compare this to some of their global counterparts, they spend around 10%.
Yes.
So there is already, I think, an uptick. And if you look at digital transformation in financial services, India has done far better than any of the global counterparts, right?
Yes.
So that itself means that Indian banks need to spend a lot more in technology to really harness the power of what is happening in the country today, right? The scale size that I mentioned to you earlier, I don't think anywhere in the globe, you know, we have seen that kind of size and scale. So we need to spend more. I think that's a given thing. Now, when I transpose the same number back to fintechs, Indian fintech is around $30 billion, of which infrastructure fintechs have raised around $10 billion. So it's that it's when you look at, compare that ratio to global, you know, the fintech financial infrastructure companies are 50% of overall financial fintech funding. So there also, I think there is a potential where financial infrastructure led companies can actually get more investment. So A, they need to invest, and B, financial infrastructure fintechs also have a potential to get more money. So I think both can play, which is an opportunity, you know, in my view. The again, the challenge and opportunity is platformification. So banks are also wanting to play a role beyond transaction management and supporting the overall lifecycle management of either is a consumer or is a merchant or a company. Right? So this whole focus is on creating platform ecosystem. And this again, rather than a product-led solution approach. So this also, you know, comes to the same thing. Should I make, should I buy? Because you know, this is something which you can embed it itself, right? So I think that's, again, one of the challenge or opportunity, whichever way you want to look at it. Microservices and emerging technology like blockchain or API banking, for example, is again something which is nascent, can create a lot of opportunities. But it'll also require investment, you know, from a banking perspective. So this is, I believe, you know, a few of the challenges, but yet also a few of the opportunities which are available to the banking sector as a whole.
Perfect. Let's just wrap it up with one question. And do you see, you know, 20 years from now, more of engineering grads becoming bankers, or you think bankers will be largely CAs, MBAs, etc.?
I think that answer is already, why would I wait for two more decades for that answer, Hamsini? The fact is, today, if you are not digital native, you cannot be a banker. See, wow. Please understand, and there's a reason why I say this, Hamsini. Today, when you look at consumer or whether you look at a company, okay, these are the two spectrum of banking. Consumers are already experiencing digital in their daily life, right? There is an Amazon, Flipkart, Swiggy, Ola, Uber, et cetera, right? Everything that they do and see today is all digital. Why yes. Would they not expect the same in banking? So banks are necessarily catering to everything digital for consumers. The same is with a merchant or a company. If so, today a banker needs to be digitally native whenever they are consumer facing. But it is not only front office, right? Even the back office, for example. So I cannot not only digitize my entire front office and not do the same to my entire back end, which is, you know, which needs to be also end to end digital, because the turnaround time which is required, or you know, to develop, to process a transaction or assess a credit, etc., everything needs to be digital. So not only has my front end to be digital, my back end also needs to be digital. So if I do not think, eat, breathe digital, then I cannot be a banker. So it's not it's not 2 decades later, it is already there. So
wonderful.
But the point is, you don't need to be a CA or an engineer, etc., right? So I won't go by way of qualification, but I think digital native is really where I would put it, right? So whatever
the your needs to be digital.
Exactly.
Got it.
You should understand digital, you should think digital, and you should apply digital.
Perfect, perfect. It doesn't matter what you really studied for. That's interesting. Thank you so much, Ajay, for joining in. It was a lovely conversation. Thank you.
Likewise, Amjad. Thank you so much for having me around.
With that, it was a wrap on this edition of the India at 10 series on financial services. Joining you soon with another interesting episode.